Before I start, I just want to, again, just acknowledge the courage of these three wonderful people who we all know and love. I also want to acknowledge that in the audience we have their partners, or at least two of them, and there's some courage there as well. Now, we don't know whether they've actually rehearsed this and said, yes, you can say that, no, you can't say that. But I've asked them to be fresh, to be honest. They've had these questions for a little while. But we'd love you just to speak from your heart and be able to help us learn. So thank you very much, everyone, for that. So where we'd like to start is really hearing a little bit about how you came to meet, and perhaps tell us a little bit about how you came to meet, your marriage, a couple of details about that. And what is it that really holds you together? What is it that makes... what's the gold for you? And Ross, you've got the microphone. Are you happy to start?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm happy to start. I'm a slow runner when it comes to getting married and relationships. I was 30 and Gail was 29. So we actually met 11 years... or 12 years earlier than that, at a small youth group called the League of Youth, which is a church missionary society group. And I went there when I was about 18. And Gail was also attending about the same time. So that's where we first met. So the relationship matured over a long period of time, but we didn't go out together during that period, although I believe... went to her 21st and she invited me somewhere. I can't remember much of the details. But it's... by the time you're getting to 30 and you're thinking about maybe God wants you overseas, and that was my case. I was growing conviction that I should be available to go where God leads me, and because of links with missionary societies, that was one of the possibilities. I thought that I didn't want to go without somebody. And in the meantime, I had been keeping an eye on Gail and visit her a couple of times and ask her privately and me privately if you want to know about how it came that we got together. But it was quite an interesting story, but I won't share that too much. Since then, we've been to worked in Bangladesh for 9 years, had two children, came back to Perth, and I worked at Murdoch, and Gail has been very caring and supportive. I'd much prefer Gail was out here, you know, John. So if you want to come out, Gail, and share, I'd love to. So right from the beginning, we've had a relationship that has involved God. It's been very much part of our journey. He's been there. We've prayed together. We've shared together. And we've struggled together in all those things too. So it's not been always an easy journey. Can I just mention that recently a friend of ours who's been married about 20 years said that marriage is bloody hard. And I think there's an element of that in it all too.
Can I ask you, what is it, Ross, that brings your spirit alive together?
You shouldn't ask me about feelings.
Well, you can always use geometry or...
She's nodding her head out there. I think being friends and sharing some special times. Did anyone watch Victoria last night?
Yes.
Didn't you love it at the end? It was a very romantic type session, but where they end up in front of a little fire and she's darning and he's cooking the fish over a pan over the fireplace.
So are you using this to reflect an experience you've had with God?
Yeah, well, I think it reflects friendship and just simple things that you do together.
Thanks, Ross.
My relationship with Claire started kind of in the year after my previous marriage broke down. And so I was very similar to how you described, John. My first marriage was out of an evangelical tradition that was very based in ideals around what marriage is meant to be. And I hadn't really done the work about what I needed to be doing in a relationship. So when Claire and I finally got together, it was after I'd spent some time actually looking about who I wanted to be and who I needed to be. So when Claire and I started hanging out, I wasn't looking for a relationship. We started hanging out as friends at Murdoch Uni and in a Bible study group and all sorts of things. And through that time, we realized we'd been going to the same events for about 11 years or so previously to that. So we kind of were leading these parallel lives. Through the year of realizing that, or at the end of the year of hanging out and doing all sorts of things where we were actually loving each other but not necessarily romantically, we kind of realized this is what we were doing, and it sort of all went from there. So we've been married 11 years now, 11 and a half years, just over 11 years. And I guess the things that bring us alive, we hadn't really talked about this, so I'm trying to remember different bits and pieces.
Just anything that comes from your heart.
Oh, look, sleepovers are magic. When we send our kids away for a sleepover and have time to go, oh, there you are, that's great, and we go out for breakfast and just have these lovely conversations, it's just magic. So that's at this point where things are at.
Thank you, Tyson.
For those of you who don't know me, I'm married to Warwick. We've been married for 33 years, and he's not here today. So I will try and honour... Yeah, so this is my perspective. So
that's what we wanted.
I did tell him I was on this panel and would be speaking today. I didn't say, would you like to come, but... Oh, I might have. I can't remember. I might have said, do you want to come? And he said, no, that's fine. So he probably trusts me. Here we go. So I was 24 when I met Warwick, and he was... I wasn't. We got married. I was 22 or 23 when I met Warwick, and he's 3 years older than me. I had... we come from completely different backgrounds, but also very similar. So he's one of two. In farming background, parents who work hard on the land and, you know, take value in hard work, good Presbyterians who sang Onward Christian Soldiers every Sunday in church, which is one of his... He used to love that. So that's where he's from. And I'm from a family of 13, 9 brothers and 3 sisters, working class, scraping enough together to feed us and clothe us all, Presbyterian as well. So that we had that in common. Anyway, I had travelled... All of my sisters, just to put it in perspective, I have 3 sisters and brothers. Everyone was married by the time they were 20 and started having children. Not me. I was not going to do that. So at age 20, I left Australia with a girlfriend for 2 years, travelled, came back, worked, decided I was going to be a teacher. Was working with an accountant, and Warwick started working for that accounting firm. And so one of the girls in the office was told, we've got a farmer, you're going to love him. So that was he was earmarked for her, all happy, because I was never going to get married. Anyway, 3 months... I worked for 2 weeks when Warwick was there, and then I went off to study, to do teacher training, and kept going back to help. It was a small firm, and I used to babysit the owner's kids, and so I would see Warwick a lot. So then they all invited me out for drinks, and Warwick and I got chatting, and then he said, do you want to play tennis on Sunday? I'm a great softballer, I'm not a great tennis player, but off I went. Then he would say, look, I'm going to this event, I need a partner, do you want to come? So I'd go along. We were very much just friends. There was no nothing. And then, a bit like every relationship, you start to realise like you like that person a bit more than you thought you would, and so on. After we'd been going out for about a year, Warwick said to me, I'm never going to get married. I said, me neither. So we're never... So we'll never have that awkward conversation. So we felt we were right, you know, we were quite happy. But right from the beginning, he knew I was a Christian and that it was important to me that my faith in Jesus and God, that it wasn't just I go to church on Sundays. And so he said he felt not exactly the same as me, but he had a belief in God, and there we are. He started going to church with me, and unfortunately, and fortunately, when I mentioned to people at church we were engaged, we then were met with a bit of a brick wall, as in, well, you can't marry him because he's not really a Christian. So we then had a bit of a three-hour chat with a couple of elders and minister who said, unless Warwick can stand up in church and read this statement and say he believes it, we won't marry you. So we said, see you later. That was a very difficult time. So in adversity, you can sometimes be drawn together. My mother thought it was a very good thing that I did. My background and Warwick's really, Warwick's growing up in the church he grew up in was you're never really good enough, and no matter what you do, you're not really good enough. That whole guilt thing about belief in God, you know. And mine, on the other hand, was a bit evangelical. Unless you fit the box, you're not really saved, and you're really on the road to hell in a handbasket, really, if you do these things. So at that point, Warwick and I could be really honest about what was really important, and my faith has always been important. So we decided that, okay, they weren't going to marry us. We'd find someone else who did. And 20 families left the church the day they got up and said, we're not going to marry Thelma and Warwick. So it was quite a difficult time for a lot of people, not just me. A lot of people in our church never went back to church again, ever. Warwick and I weren't living together and we weren't married. So, and I can't, it's a bit vague, but anyway, I went to my head of department at school, was married to a minister, and she said, Des will see you. And we went to him, got married, and the people that left the church we were in, Bassendean Presbyterian Church, started meeting at our house. So we had church at our house. You know, so after we got married, every Sunday, we went to someone's house and we had guitars and stuff and sang, and we had Bible studies, and Warwick did all of that. So that was the start of our marriage,
What brings you alive? What brings your relationship alive?
Well, I was totally, absolutely, completely and utterly in love with Warwick and everything about him. And I think I was quite naive too, even though I was 22 or 3 or whatever when we got married, 24. Because he's honest and open and he's funny and he has fun and he loves me deeply. So what brings us alive is we can exactly how I'm feeling about things and how important it is, and I know he wishes he could feel the same, but he doesn't. You know, that's how it is. What brings us alive is the fact that we have fun and we know that we love one another.
Have a break. Are you right? So some of these questions may already start to be answered as we go through. So feel free to say whatever you need to say in addition to what you've
said. I feel threatened.
So Ross, what does being a Christian in your relationship mean to you? How does it show itself?
It just sits there all the time. I think an illustration from the last week was Ruth, our daughter in Darwin. She sent by Facebook or just sent a message anyway, saying that her back was really bad, and she wasn't able to go to work. And that means it was very painful. And Gail came in to say that she just got this message. And we just... I went I went sort of cold shivery feeling for her, because particularly because I've had a very bad back over the years, and it's a very a real struggle, and so we just drew in close to each other and had a comforting for each other, but also a little prayer together for Ruth, and that was, and that felt secure, that she was secure before God. And the future, we weren't saying that she was going to be healed miraculously or anything like that, but really comforted that we could do what we best we could. Of course, we would offer to go up and be supportive, be with her if she needed it, and we have done that. But just to hang out together, particularly when things are tough. And there's also the other side. There's a physical side of comfort in marriage. We don't want to gloss over that and say that that's not important, but it's there. And we share lots of things together. Gail says that one of the things she likes best about us is that we're a team together. Mm. I don't express feelings, and she does. She's great at hospitality, inviting people home and opening up herself. I'm supportive of that, but can't do it. I fix things and she feeds people. There's a sort of a complementary aspect to our lives that gives us meaning. Things that I can't do, she does, and things that she can't do, I can sometimes do.
Thank you, Ross.
It sounds very similar. Yes. I guess I struggled with this question because I'm struggling with the question for myself of what does being a Christian mean anyway. But I guess for us, there's a few things. I talked with Claire a little bit about this question, and she reminded me that it was Teresa of Avila who has this quote. And I'm going to get it wrong and I'll mangle it, but anyway, something about, I do not love, I do not even want to love, but I want to love. And that's been something I've held on to for a long time, in that sometimes the relationship is such that I don't even want to be there, but I want to be there. So it's, so that's helpful. I guess for me also, maybe where my understanding of Christianity comes into it is the Leonard Cohen's anthem has a line that says that birds they sang at the break of day, start again, I heard them say, don't dwell on what has passed away or what is yet to be. And it's, to me, it captures the essence of what the gospel is around start again. Just doesn't matter what's happened, just start again, you're free to start again. So if you're hurt or, you know, frustrated or whatever, it's okay, just decide to start again and it's okay. So that's been useful to me. Claire and I have completely different ways of, or different types of Christianity or practices. So I guess how does it show itself? We read a little book by Abbot Christopher Jamieson, I think is his name, who's a Benedictine abbot in the UK, who talked about the Benedictine way. We took turns reading it out to each other while we cooked dinner, and it was lovely. This was about 10 years ago, BC, and that's been very useful to us because it frames hospitality and some of the other Benedictine practices very well, and it's been central to how we've try to live our lives, our marriage together. And I guess, so for us, hospitality is a big thing. So Tuesday night dinners, baking day, you name it. We've had young people from church in our house and other sort of, you know, New Year's Eve stuff. So it's kind of, so that type of thing has been very important to us.
Thanks, Tyson.
Before we were married, a couple at church had a chat to, I think we were together, Warwick and I, and I've carried this with me for a long time. I think it's good advice regardless of whether you're a Christian or not, and that is, think of when you go into a marriage with someone, can you list 10 things about the other person that you admire, respect, love, cherish? Can you run through a list of things for the person that you love and that you're married to? And when at times when I was really angry or Warwick, you know, or we'd had an argument about something or there was something going on that was quite frustrating, in order to help me get through those times, I would go through that list, and it changes. It's changed. It's not the same list as it was when I first... So I have found that really helpful. So if I'm really angry about something, okay, and I think, oh, I can't stand this, you know, whatever, I'll in my head go, okay, what's one thing about Warwick that I really admire? What do I respect about him? And I start doing that in my head, and I find that really useful to dissipate the anger a bit maybe or the frustration and to start looking at the issue, not the person so much or whatever. So that's just something that I find helps me. I feel that Warwick doesn't know he's the beloved of God. I think he's grown up with rules and I don't think he feels that deep love. He'll say to me, say a prayer for me. My family's a little bit like that. You know, my 12 siblings, growing up, I was the weird one. The older ones went to church. We all went to church and Sunday school. Some went on to, you know, in the 50s or 60s, everyone had to go on to the youth group there. By choice, I went on to church after 16 and kept going to youth group and taught Sunday school. So I was a little bit different from the others. But they all accepted me. I knew I was loved among my siblings. And accepted. They accepted the fact that I had a sticker on the back of my car with the world. God put it all together. Do you remember the 70s Christianity? We had stickers everywhere. Smile, smile if you love Jesus. The world, God put it all together. Some terrible ones like, my God's alive, sorry about yours. I mean, fancy putting that. You know, I still cringe when I think of that one. So I've gone through the whole Jesus movement, loving every minute of it, telling the world. So my family were used to that. So with Warwick, it was just, it had calmed down a lot by then, obviously. So for me, Warwick will accept my practices, if you like. He'll also ask about them and what are you reading, what are you doing? So that's how I share it.
Just to clarify, are you telling us that Warwick does or does not identify as a Christian?
He believes in God and he believes in Jesus. I still think he's hung up on he's not quite good enough.
Right.
I think that's it. Mm. I could be wrong, but I think that he feels like he hasn't jumped through enough hoops, really. Right. But... because of our cousins in Esperance spend a lot of time with us, or his cousins in Esperance come up and we've gone down a lot, and they used to say to me, first of all, you know, why do people believe in God? You know, science is the way and so on. So then when we went down one Easter, I went to the little church under the tree that Luke's parents used to go to in Esperance. You know, Luke and Jen, his dad and mum used to go there. So I went there and they went, oh, okay. So... even this year, they were up in Perth and we had Christmas dinner 4 weeks ago with them and their parents, Michelle's parents from Adelaide, and her family also are very much, there's no God, it's ridiculous. But they asked me to say grace at the meal. So that's what happens with my family and Warwick's. And Warwick's mum or brother said to me once, thanks for bringing Christmas to our family. We go to church, you know, whatever, or whatever it is. It's never just, it's not commercial as much as thing. And a friend of mine said the other day, thanks, this is my favourite Christmas present, and it was a tier card that I bought two Sundays ago. Yeah. And he said to me, that's my favourite Christmas present. And I thought, so, you know, although it's not the same as other Christian marriages, it's not Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine.
And I also believe
probably not the same as other marriages in general.
I don't know. It's the only one I know.
Each marriage is different, isn't it?
So. Yeah.
Thanks, Thelma. So I'm wondering, everyone, I just want to let everyone know we're going to try and just have a little bit of time at the end for questions. We'll see how we go for time. Everyone has said that they're happy to answer questions that they choose to answer. They have the right not to answer any questions. So the next, where we're going to now is probably really building on what you've already talked about, which are really the practices. What practices do you share with your partner that might be what you might call Christian practices or practices of your spirit? Do you have any examples of those?
Only like music. So I will play Christian music at home. I'll play, you know, Shower of Grace. I'll put carols on. We'll talk about Christmas. When Warwick came to an Easter service here, that it was all dark and we had Claire around it and we had the tent. Do you remember that? He would say that was the most powerful message he's ever heard about Easter in his whole life. So, no, I would guess I would say there aren't set practices. I guess I live out in the faith that I have and Warwick shares in and out of that. But for Christmas, you know, we pray, I pray. Warwick will ask me to pray for him. So there's that whole thing about him not feeling that he can do it. But he does pray within himself. He'll tell me that. So, you know, I can't speak for him. I can just say that I do what I do. I'll read the Bible. I've got one of Claire's books, but I feel a bit guilty about now, but I will bring it back about, you know, the Iona Christmas and things like that I just love. And so I share that with Warwick and I go, look what I've just read. That's what we do and that's all I can do. I don't believe it's up to me whatever he believes in. It's up to him and God. So therefore, I just leave it at that.
Thanks, Thelma.
I'm privileged in that whenever Claire is doing a sermon, I get about 2 weeks before that to have a chat with her about the ideas that she's reading and, you know, so what topic's coming up next and, you know, and we'll have a good chat about it and, you know, over a couple of days. So I really enjoy that side of things. That's probably more of the intellectual engagement. As a family, we try and make sure we say thank you before every meal and that's kind of evolves and changes and what have you, depending on how ratty the kids are feeling. But the intentionality of stopping and being thankful is part of that. Claire's from a much more contemplative sort of faith practice than what I am. So she tends to more likely put a candle on and sit and think.
So could you say that? She puts a what on?
Puts on a candle and, you know, has that space and some quiet time. I'm much more likely to need to go and make something with my hands. So either cook a meal, maybe put a candle on while I'm cooking or go and, go and make something out of wood in the shed or something like that. That's just therapeutically focusing. In some ways, it's a bit like, when you're doing something creative, you kind of get the muse comes and you just disappear and you just get so sunk into the thing that you're doing. There's something divine and transporting about that experience. So that's probably more my experience of doing that.
And that sounds like that answer to that first question there, Tyson, where that might be something that brings your spirit alive. You know, your
Yeah, personally,
practical thing,
yeah,
you're it's making things.
Me going in the shed isn't something that brings Claire alive, but but yeah.
Thanks. Right,
and that's probably answers that second part of the question. That's not something that Claire shares. Is me going and doing my thing, and she does her thing. So yeah.
Great, thank you.
This was about set things we do, is it?
Things that you would generally do together as
generally, so he's moved from set to general.
As a couple.
I think that set is not set. It's you do it for a while and you change. We've had periods in our life where we've read scripture together. We've had regular prayer times. I think over the years, the one thing that we do regularly is say thanks for the meal, and it's often that leads on, or sometimes leads on to thanks for a particulars. It's also coming together when we're struggling or having a hard time with our kids, and or with friends who are suffering, and we just want to pray, mention them. But we also go through drought periods when we don't communicate much at all and do things together. That's sort of a bit cyclic.
Ross, do you have separate practices, do you think, when it comes to your bringing your spirit alive or your Christian experience?
Yes. Gail has a focus on certain books, I think, and she reads them. And sometimes she said, can I read this to you? And that's good. I'm a bit of a drought period in that area at the moment, and so I'm not doing that as much as I have done in the past.
Thank you, everyone.
I think overall, there's that the really deep experiences of the past and the reflections on it, that when we go through trials and difficulties, was just thinking about that grace of God in our lives and how much He loves us and accepts us. That's always sitting underneath everything. And thanks, Thelma and Tyson, for sharing the panel and hearing your stories. So
we have one more question. I think, in fact, we have two, but one more, one which will probably take us into an area we might all be very interested in, but is probably some of the more difficult aspects. Every committed relationship has a time, as Thelma's mentioned, when we feel like not being there and things get tough. How do you hang in there when things get tough? What do you do? How do you stay there when it's tough?
It's true, things get tough. Where's Gail looking? One of the problems that I face is I go into my shell. And one of the things that Gail faces is she goes into her shell too. So we don't argue, we just go quiet. And that's not good. Gail's much more open generally about things. And she wants me to talk about them, but I retreat. That leads to problems. But eventually we come through it. Sometimes in the past, I went through a very depressed period in Bangladesh, and went to see a psychiatrist, a Christian psychiatrist, traveling around, and she helped me understand that, in fact, I was just overworked, and that was the problem. And so my depression worked out, had an outworking that wasn't obvious to me that was the issue, but she highlighted that, and we got some help. Recently, in fact, it was 3 months ago, I was going through a harder time, and we decided that it would be good and I eventually accepted that I should go along for some help. And in that process, from a counsellor, heard about the Relationships Australia course on how to communicate in relationships. And so that was only on Wednesday. So Gail and I went along to that on Wednesday. And that was helpful too. So getting help is an important part of that whole journey.
And what a wonderful thing to hear, Ross. Someone at your stage of life, in the length of your marriage, you're still doing this.
Speak up, boy.
Turn your hearing aid up.
For me, I guess it's trying to remember that to not take things personally. I get caught up going into my shell when I start feeling like everything is ganging up on me personally, when it's not about me. The other thing that has helped is that when Claire and I got married, we were asked, do you want to be married to me and do I want to be married to her? And then Claire and I turned to each other, or turned to you guys, to the congregation, and said, will you help us to be married? And you guys all said yes. And by proxy, Michael and Lyndon have been stepping into that role on your behalf for us on a sort of monthly, six-weekly basis or whatever since we got married. And we have found that immensely helpful and useful, both to know that we are supported, but also to have an outside set of eyes looking in and going, hang on, what's going on here? Or you need to pay attention to this, or what about that? So that's been very helpful to us. I think it's still tough when things aren't going so well, and in the moment or when we're tired, you know, trying to get over the hurt or whatever is very difficult. So, yeah.
Do any of you have a way that you have learnt that can move you on from there? Is there something that you might do or think or?
For me personally, the intention has been a big part of our marriage, of our relationship. So being intentional about being with each other, intentional about loving each other and trusting each other. Sometimes that's as easy as breathing, and other times it's really hard. So, but paying attention to needing to do that.
Thank you, Tyson.
Just briefly, I also think forgiveness of yourself and also the other person, and going, okay, although I still think I'm right, I'm going to say sorry. Let's work out how to work this out. Sometimes you both have to just go, okay, we disagree. We agree to disagree. What are we going to do? And yeah, I guess it's that intention of, as Tyson just said, your intention to be married, to stay married, to try and work this out. Eventually, you work on that and do that and work a way around the difficulty. And yeah, sometimes adversity also throws you together, and so that you go through something that's quite difficult, and then you realise the strength that you get from one another. And that also is something that I always reflect on. That we've 33 years of some quite difficult times, not always brought on by both of us, but just family and so on, that has helped us forge together. I guess sometimes we, you know, Warwick could go, well, we've made it another year. And I go, yep, we have. And we still do care about one another very much, and I think that helps.
Yes. Folk, we will be asking them one more question, which will be a very short response in a couple of moments, but I think we might have a minute or two for any questions that people might have for anyone on the panel. Maybe they're the sorts of questions you might have over a cup of coffee with individuals. Yes. Okay. They've been courageous, haven't they? Just in sharing their lives with us. It's just been beautiful. So now comes their opportunity to inform. Assume that you're giving advice to anyone who's choosing to commit themselves to each other of any age. What would your advice be to anyone who's wanting to make that longer term commitment to each other?
I might start with Ross.
Listen to your old voice.
From my experience, marry someone who will help you to be your fullest self, or be with someone who will help you to be your fullest self, and don't try and make someone else smaller. Help them to be as big as they can be.
Yeah, wonderful, thank you.
I was going to say clone Gail. but that only applies to the blokes. It's too much. At the Relationships Australian course that we went to, they talked about three things, and in some ways they're fairly traditional things that apply to Christians or not to Christians, but one is to listen. The second thing was, and it's already come up, be good friends. And the third thing was an interesting one. They said, of all the things that they went through, was the I. Reflect back how you're feeling about yourself, rather than be saying you have caused it, but I'm feeling like I can't talk about it, is what I should say.
Ditto what they both said. I agree. Just be yourself and be loving, giving and forgiving, and be honest if you can.
Therapist friend of mine and others work. When I see couples in therapy, they tend to come because their differences have become frustrating, seen as deliberate acts of unkindness or no longer compatible. There's a lack of appreciation of their differences when differences can bring balance to decision making and a greater richness to one's life. The communication style is combative, with neither side actually listening to each other, and that's assuming people are actually talking about how they feel when the other does certain things. Usually there's a lot of accusations flying, you language, with very little I language. Frustrations have also built up because problems have not been addressed early and have simply been held onto or dismissed and minimised. So there are issues around bravery and courage to speak up, and humility to hear, leading to a relationship based on trust. You don't have to be a Christian to have a good marriage. Just be a decent human being. Irvin Yalmon, a celebrated and compassionate psychotherapist, said the key to his marriage lasting, given some infidelity on his part, was this. Love is not a passion, is not just a passion sparked between two people. There's infinite difference between falling in love and standing in love. The idea is that you stand in love, not fall in love. And try to live in such a way that you're always bringing something more to life in the other. I just want to thank on all our behalf for Thelma and Tyson and Ross. Thank you.